This is James from SurvivalPunk.com back with another installment in our first aid series that is, this is the third part now, so, and I thought once again that I can combine a few into this one, but I'm not. So, maybe I originally planned this episode to be sprains, strains, breaks, and tools. So, if you want to hear that tools part, email me, james@survivalpunk.com, or leave a comment. I'm deciding if it's even worth doing that episode just on the various tools that you should keep in your first aid kit, or if you people are just done with the first aid kit now, if you have been first aided out. It is a huge topic, and I have no idea how I thought that I was going to make it one episode when I've gone on for two episodes already, and this will be the third one. And this is just still on basically the level 1 and 2 first aid kits. We haven't even got to, you know, the more advanced ones that I'm a little hesitant to even cover. I'm not a big supporter of getting one of these super expensive, all-inclusive, everything first aid kit that's, you know, as big as a bug-out bag in and of itself without the training to use the equipment in it. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, Richard, Grizz, and we both in our first aid kit have airways. We both have airways. We're not trained to use those. We don't really know. We just happen to have them, you know, and it's like, there's a lot of stuff in those fancy first aid kits that, you know, you won't know how to use, and it's a waste of money, you know. Unless, you know, if somehow you're the first at a scene and a first responder shows up after you, or someone that is medically trained but they don't have the equipment and you're like, hey, I got this, you know, then they can rummage through it and see if they can find what they need, you know. Otherwise, training first, then buy the things that you need to meet your situation. So, I'm not a fan of those kits. You know, if you are a like doctor or EMT and you have all that experience and you want to buy it or build it, then by all means, go right ahead. For the rest of us though, we don't. We don't need it all yet. Oh, the board's upside down. So, if you want to leave feedback for the show, questions, comments, and, you know, if I get enough questions, I'll do a Q&A show like always. And maybe I'll start doing those Q&A shows. If I get a lot of questions, I'll break them out for just the... What I'm looking to add some extra things to the Survival Punk Army, which is my membership program, and I'm gonna probably break that off and launch a Patreon soon. Basically, because it could bring me a little extra money, but it could also bring me a little extra exposure. I don't like that. So, and you know, give the Survival Punk Army members just a little bit more, but give the Patreons, you know, a good deal of things. And one of those things is, you know, like a monthly sort of live video chat where once a month I'll get on here and, you know, it'll be private just between us and I'll chat and answer questions or whatever. So let me run something by you guys. And if you like this idea and you're a Survival Punk Army member, yay. If you like this idea and you're not, you just let me know. So a lot of the YouTube videos now that have Patreon accounts, at the end they'll run special credits, like, you know, giving thanks to their Patreons, kind of like their producers. And I was like, maybe I could record a Patreon Survival Punk Army member into the show shout out. So we'll run the song, and then at the end, you know, I'll be like, this show is brought to you by Matt French, Melanie, Ed, Buddy, you know, and I'll just name off all the people that are Survival Punk Army members, Patreon members, you know, whatnot. And, you know, there's maybe it'd be cool to be like, yo, hey, that's my name. If you like that, let me know. If you don't like that, let me know. So this is one of the things that I'm thinking to do. If you have any other suggestions, let me know. And back to that phone number. The phone number to call into the show and leave a voicemail to be answered, not a live. You're not going to call this and get me unless somehow my direct voicemail gets turned off and my phone rings. And I'm like, what do you want? Oh, God, I'm leaving a voicemail. The number is 615-657-9104. 657... Area code 615-657-9104. I may be switching to a toll-free number in the near future. So that maybe make it that, you know, I'm pretty sure with all the cell phones now, everything in the U.S. is a local call. I don't think there's long distance between states anymore. But maybe I'll be able to get some international calls that way. There is always, you can record your call and email it to me, jamesfarrellpunk.com, and that'll also work. The new review and sticker program. So, mainly, if you go onto iTunes and you rate us and review us, and then send me an email, james@sorrelpunk.com, with your username, so I can, you know, look and verify, oh, this user and this. Okay. In that email, also include your shipping details. I will mail you a free Survival Punk sticker. You know, sticker for a review. And mainly just iTunes, but if you, I mean, don't go on a rampage and review me everywhere and expect like six stickers. If you're a Stitcher person and you review me, rate me and review me on there and send me your stuff, I'll send you a sticker. I'm not sure. That's the two big ones. Yeah. I may be syndicated somewhere else. And, you know, if I find syndication, I usually will try to sign up for it and get into it. Like, I tried to get an iHeartRadio, and I'm not real sure what happened there. It's funky, and it's a roundabout way to get in, and I don't really care for it. That's probably why more people don't do it. But if Stitchers or iTunes, either one, rate me, review me, send me an email with your address and your username, and I'll send you a free sticker. So if you like free stuff, there you go. And I believe that's it. I believe that's all the opening preamble. I mentioned that there is a Survival Punk Army, and I would love for you to join it. Details are found at the website. It's as cheap as $5 a month, and I am a fan of you $5 a month supporters. It's a nice residual sort of income throughout the month, and I appreciate that. You can also join, like, there's monthly for $5, and there's like a 3 month, a 6 month, and a 1 year, you know, and maybe at some point in the future, I'll roll out like a lifetime Survival Punk membership, but we're not close to that yet. So, I like the $5 a month one is my favorite. So, thank you to all the Survival Punk Army members. I could not do this without you. There's a lot of days where I have to get up hours early just to record a podcast before going to work. And it's because of you that gets me out of bed. You know, otherwise I'd be like, you know, my throat hurts today and I got a headache and fuck it, you know. But I'm like, I can't let down the punk. So with that, let's get into the show. And I didn't waste a too terrible long time. So yeah, sprains, strains, breaks, and I'll mention dislocations, but don't expect a lot on them. So sprains suck. Sprains suck anyway. Sprains suck if you can go to the hospital, if you can just rest for days. Sprains suck so much worse if you're in the wilderness or collapse down, bugging out, anything like that. A sprain is just, what's the opposite of icing on a cake? It's just that much worse. You know, you may be the big, strong man of the family and able to take care of everything, but a sprain could just put you on your ass, and probably will. You know, probably 2 years ago, I rolled my ankle, maybe the worst that I've ever rolled it. You know, I was incapacitated for a week, probably 4 days at least, I think. And even after that, it was still rough going for days. Like, I was able to, I forced myself to get on it, but I should have probably for a solid week not been on that foot. And, you know, just to really like lay on the fact that, you know, it makes everything harder. After that happened, going home, I had a flat tire and I had to change to my donut. I had to change my tire to my donut, you know, on this sprained ankle. So yeah, I was able to do it, but man, was it just so much more difficult to get that tire off, to change it, to wheel it around. You know, I'm having to like hop on one foot and it was a pain in the ass. So, you know, imagine, you know, having to bug out and you break your ankle or you sprain your ankle or you just, you know, you roll your ankle. It's incapacitated. You're not bugging out. In our Survival Punks group on Facebook, one member was talking about he's listened to a podcast recently. And I guess one of the host's wife's plan is to, if she has to bug home from work, she's just going to walk 28 miles with a pack. And I'm like, man, what is this, fucking Sarah Connor from the second Terminator movie? Like, I don't want to walk 28 miles with a pack in a single day. I mean, you know, one of my buddies from the military commented, and, you know, he was like, yeah, my guys have rucked like 28 miles with a pack, you know, averaging like 4 miles an hour. But it even, you know, it, those trained military guys were not very happy about it. You know, it sucked for them. You know, yes, a human could probably do it. And you know, these guys were pretty much top physical performance. You know, they're used to this. They're used to these long rucks with these heavy packs. Most of us are not. 28 miles is huge. So, you know, and the average 3-4 mile an hour pace for people for walking, that's an all day. That's a long, long trip. Imagine if you sprain your ankle on that, you know, there's no way you're making that in a day. That one, you can't see air quotes, that air quotes one day hike, you know, has now probably turned into a week. You know, I'm just, how far are you going to get with a sprained ankle that you can't move? I mean, for you may be just laid up, not even able to move for a week. Had that happened when I had that ankle injury, hang it up, you know, 4 days or so, I wouldn't even be doing anything. So don't discount the sprain as being the great sort of neutralizer there. So how do you deal with it? The old tried and true advice is the acronym RICE, R-I-C-E, which stands for rest, ice, compression, and elevation. Not some of the easiest things to accomplish, not at home. If you're stuck in the wilderness on like a camping trip or a hiking trip, you know, ice, elevation, you're not going to really kicking up your foot. So it gets a bit harder. So the C in RICE, is your ACE bandage. So in your first aid kits, carry at least an ACE bandage. I usually carry a few, different sizes, different varieties. I have sort of a love-hate relationship with both kinds of ACE bandages. So really you've got the non-sticky traditional kinds with those stupid metal clips that you always lose. I always have either one or they're just gone. So I usually tend to want to keep an unopened one in my first aid kit. So if I use one and then promptly lose those metal pins after a little while, I'll just want a new one in there, unopened with both little metal clips so that I can lose them as well. And, you know, someone smart tried to come up with a solution to that problem by making ACE bandages that self-adhere to each other. So they won't really stick to anything else, but they'll stick to themselves. So as you wrap, it's sticking to itself, which seems like a wonderful idea, except for they always just get wrinkled up and just horrible. Like, 'cause the wrinkles will stick to each other and they're okay. And they don't stick the best. You know, they stick moderately well. And I usually will still tuck in the end. You know, when I get to the end, instead of just putting it on itself, I'll tuck it under it all. And that'll keep it from unraveling. So I usually will keep both of those. I'll keep a variety. I'll keep like maybe one unopened one, you know, and there's different thicknesses too. So I'll have some like really wide sort of 2-3 inch ones and, you know, some smaller 2 inch ones or so for smaller things. So lots of ACE bandages. They're cheap and, you know, I'll just get a variety of them and just run them. The other part of the RICE is ice. So rest, ice, which you can accomplish in a first aid kit by carrying instant ice packs. And I've never been a big fan of advocating instant ice packs until really plotting out this episode, and then I began to think, like, maybe I think I'm going to add some instant ice packs, like one or two, maybe depending on size. My first aid kits tend to be a bit packed, so maybe I need to think about upgrading to a bigger, you know, container, a bigger bag for my first aid kits. But just thinking about all the uses for an instant ice pack, I really think that I might add one. And I may shop around. There's a couple kinds of the chemical reaction that make the instant ice packs. There's one that you can cut apart and use the stuff inside of it as a component in the binary explosion tannerite. So one of those two things you can combine with something else that I forget, and I'm sure someone will comment and be like, "Oh, James, you dumb fuck, it's totally this." Sure, someone will comment and tell me the other part of tannerite. I could Google it, but I'm talking to you right now, so I don't have time to Google. It's rude to Google while having a conversation with your friends. So, well, that changed again. For having a sprain, a strain, head injury, all the swelling things that you need an ice pack for, I'm starting to think that maybe it would behoove you to add an ice pack or two. So for that, like I said, it is one half of the component of tannerite. So if you carry some of the other part, then you have a legal to use and transport explosive, not massive destruction, but it may have its uses. And maybe you have someone from heat stroke or heat exhaustion, or it's just too hot and you just were like, fuck it, I'm only out here for the weekend. I'm having a camping trip. I'm going to break open one or two of these ice packs and just cool down, break it open and cool down your drink or something. I mean, you don't want to pour it in it, but you can pack it around it and, get it to chill down a little bit. So, I was always like, it's such a luxury item and just a, waster of space. But now I'm starting to rethink that. So I'm going to add some instant ice packs, and I have some, I think, around the house, the break and instantly chill ones. I have, obviously my home first aid kit. I have some of like the freezer ones that you freeze and reuse over and over. I like those a lot. Reuse item, but you can't really do that while on the trail or bugging out or whatever. So yeah, I'm thinking let's add some instant ice pack, guys. Good boots. So having a pair of good boots could save you from even having a sprained ankle in the first place. It immobilizing and sort of securing that ankle to keep it from rolling and twisting in the first place, you can avoid this. So definitely want to consider, if you're going to bug out or in, have a good pair of broken in, comfortable boots that will cinch down that ankle. I am a very minimalist footwear guy. And those things, none of them have ankle support really, cause they're minimal. And, by having the foot strengthen itself, you really shouldn't have a lot of these issues, but accidents happen. So if you do manage to twist your ankle, cause you're out there hiking with your trail shoes. So you get to camp, you take off your hiking boots, you put on your camp shoes, Vibram Five Fingers or just flip flops or whatever you have to use around the camp, because you want to let your boots air out, you want them to dry, you want your feet to breathe. It's a good idea. Most hikers, myself, I usually will put in something super light and just, I usually will throw in my Vibram Five Fingers, to be honest. And I'll swap to them, or even something even more open. Something that's like mesh water shoes. Those are good camp shoes just because they let your foot breathe and dry out. Take your socks off, hang them to dry, let your boots dry out. And, you're walking around camp, you hit like the one, tree root you weren't expecting, roll your ankle. So having that good pair of boots can help you. So I've used this in the past where I've twisted my ankle and it's not super bad, but it's it's fairly bad, you know. It's a fairly good sprain. And I'll use like two wool socks, like the thickest wool socks I have, and my junky pair of like desert combat boots, and I'll ratchet it down onto the ankle as hard as I can, compression, and it a good pair of boots that go up a good bit on your leg is going to provide some stability and immobilization so that you can kind of hobble on it, you know, and it removes some of the pain, and it really just lets you walk when you couldn't or shouldn't otherwise. So having that in mind, you know, if it's not that bad so that you can't even put any weight on it. I mean, if it's the point where if you even put your foot down, you cannot put weight on it, then this won't work. But, you know, if you can put a little bit of weight on it, then the boot trick will let you sort of ruck out. Depending on distance, you know, take some painkillers from our part one of our first aid series and just get out of there. You know, as opposed to being laid up for a little while. And lastly, on the sprain section is rest or ruck. So, you know, it's deciding whether you should try to get out and just get home or get to the hospital or just wait around, you know. If you've got a decent amount of food and water, you're comfortable, then maybe you just break open your instant ice packs, your ice bandages, then you just sort of kick back and just relax for a few days and give yourself time to heal up a little bit so that you can make it out easier. You know, maybe you make a junky sort of walking stick or, you know, a crutch out of a tree limb or something, and you get out. So, you know, it's you got to make that decision. Like, it would probably always be better to get home, to get out of that, so that you're able to, you know, use your reusable instant ice packs and, you know, kick back in your favorite chair and elevate your foot. Or, you know, maybe you sprained your elbow or something, whatever. The elbow's not that bad. You just keep walking. Throw it in a triangle bandage and just keep walking. But yeah, it's, you gotta make that decision. You know, maybe you'll, I mean, you're not really going to do any lifetime damage by walking on an ankle that's sprained, that's not so bad that you can put weight on it. Like, it may take longer to heal, but maybe doing that healing at home would be more effective than trying to do that in the wilderness where you're not really controlling the circumstances and situations. So you gotta make that decision, you know, if you think you can successfully bug out of the wilderness to home, then you do that. You know, if it's rolled pretty badly, you give yourself a couple of days. If you are completely unprepared and you don't have food and water to last that couple of days, maybe you need to try to get out. So, I mean, worst case scenario, God, you crawl out, which would suck. But, you make that decision. You know, if it's severe damage, like we'll talk about like a break or something, then maybe getting out to get to the hospital would be the best bet. Maybe you do make crutches and hop along. Maybe you crawl. You know, in that case where you actually have to get out, then that's what you do. Minor sprain, kind of hurts a little bad. You're supposed to be out there for a couple more days anyway. Just kick back and relax. Breaks. So everything we said for a sprain on being the poop on your cake, the unicing on your cake, is multiplied for a break. Everything is so much worse with a break. You know, if you break your leg, you know, like we're talking about sprain, maybe you can lace up the boot and kind of hobble on it. Probably not even remotely a good idea with the break. Even with having to like splint it up, you're not gonna be able to be like, oh, I got a splint, I can totally just walk on it now. Like it's, you may be able to with tree branch crutches, you know, hobble out, but it's not gonna be pretty, guys. Not gonna be pretty. It's going to suck. So there's two kinds of breaks. Actually, I guess there's probably a plethora. But to make things simple, you have a simple break and a compound break. Simple fracture, compound fracture. Open or closed, basically, is what we're talking about. So compound is open. That is where you have snapped a bone and it is sticking out of your skin. So with that, at least you're pretty much guaranteed to know, oh, that's broken. You know, some of the things on the inside, you're like, oh, that hurts. Maybe it's broken. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But if your bone is shoved out through your skin, oh, that's broken. Yeah, that's broken. And, you know, there's different methods for dealing with each of them. In case I haven't, and I know I haven't actually, this is not medical advice. I'm not a medical professional, and I did not stay at a Days Inn last night, so I'm not even that. Everything I'm giving you is my opinion and my thoughts. Do not construe this as medical advice. That's your disclaimer. Your mileage may vary. And all that jazz. So, what are some signs that you might have a fracture? Pain at the affected area. The area may or may not be deformed. Victim is unable to place weight on the area without experiencing pain. And that works with like arm things. Like, you're not going to be able to contract. Like, I broke my arm as a child and could not really make a fist. Like, I could perform the motion, but there was no strength in it. It was, I could close the hand, but, you know, it was like nothing. It was the weakest, you know, I couldn't grab onto things. Originally during the break, things got better. A grating sensation or sound may be present during any motion of the injured area. Ugh, yeah. So, I mean, but diagnosing a fracture without, you know, without x-rays, like x-rays, you scan it, bam, there it is. Or, you know, bone poking out of your skin. It's a bit sketchy. There are a lot of recommendations on like, oh, it could be this and it could be this. It's hard to really know, you know, like it hurts, you know, there will probably be swelling depending on it. When I broke my arm, it swole up like twice the size. So good indication, you know, it's sort of purple and bruisey, hurt like a son of a bitch, you know? So, and you know, I couldn't make a fist. Couldn't clamp down. So, you know, diagnosing it is a bit tricky unless you're a medical professional. You may think, I mean, some people are going to be hypochondriac and think everything's broken, and some people are going to be the opposite. Is there an opposite word for a hypochondriac? Is there someone that's hypochondriac? Hypochondriac? Anyway, I'm sure there is a word, and I'm sure someone's screaming at the radio, their earphones right now, like, James, it's this, but I don't know what it is. But I'm sure there is a word for people that do not ever think there's anything wrong with them. Like, oh, that's totally, no, I don't have cancer. I'm okay. Oh, dead. Especially men. Men never think anything wrong with us. Unless you're babies. Unless you're babies. So, with that said, you know, that's a good few indications that there may be a break. And if you're in doubt, treat it as a fracture. You know, if it's just a bruised bone, which I've had, and it's quite painful. If it's just a bruise, just a sprain, splinting it and treating it like a fracture can't hurt anything. I mean, sprain, immobilizing a sprain is not gonna hurt you. If anything, it could help you out. So, like I said, diagnosing that it's a true fracture, if the bone's not sticking out, obviously, could be difficult. So treat everything like a break. You're good to go. So for dealing with those fractures, compound or simple, you're going to need to splint them. You're going to need to keep them from being immobile. Compound is a bit more difficult. I'll talk about that in a second. Say the bone's inside. It's a simple fracture. You just want to throw on a splint. I love SAM splints for small things. And I don't carry... I've thought about carrying like finger splints, but I just think it's too bulky and just not really worth it. I'd rather just grab a twig and make a splint. And I'll talk about that, you know, just making a splint. But, you know, for arms, for small things, wrist or whatever, just the SAM splint is just wonderful. It rolls up small like an ace bandage. There's my alarm. I'm ahead of schedule today. Good. So, yeah, it rolls up small. If you're not familiar with it, it's sort of like a rubbery... I think it's rubber with like, okay, if you're even remotely around my age or older, you probably remember like in the 80s, we had those snap bracelets. You know, they had funky designs on them and they were long and flat and they like had a thin piece of metal inside and you would slap it on your wrist and it would roll around and make a bracelet. That's your history lesson for today, kids. It's kind of like that, only not as snappy. You know, I'm pretty sure there's either like a plastic that'll roll on the inside or a metal. And it's surrounded by like a foam rubber. It's real squishy. And it's very moldable. It's rolled up. So you unroll it and then you can wrap it around your affected area, usually long way. So you unroll it flat. And then crease it down the middle and then put it on there. And then you adhere it with ace bandages or tie it with, you know, triangle bandages or something. Tie it on there with gauze, maybe? No, not maybe gauze. You can roll it on there. You attach it to the arm so that it's splinting and immobilizing your wound, your fracture. And it does a great job. I've seen some really big ones. They get a bit bulky. So, you know, you're not going to carry a SAM splint that's going to like work for your thigh bone. That's a huge splint and, you know, breaking the femur, is tricky. You have to do some stuff to it. You have to keep it in traction. You know, it's a lot of hula bob and yeah. Podcasting.
You're right now you're recording?
Yes.
Hi people.
Be done in like 15 minutes.
Okay. I'll be in the car by then.
Okay. That was Catch Potato Mike, guys. Yeah, you're not going to carry a Sam Splint big enough to do your thigh bone or something. It's just not going to happen. So for that, we would want to make it. But, you know, arms and stuff. The Sam Splint is real good for, like, yeah, like if you break your arm. Great for that. For everything bigger, we're gonna make our splint. And smaller, too. You can get a Sam Splint small enough for the fingers. Why bother? Why bother? You know, for fingers, I mean, honestly, I would just go home. I mean, a finger is not going to stop you. A toe is going to hurt, but it's not going to stop you. Just go home for that. I mean, if you just want to exercise and practice your survival skills, you know, get a strong twig and make a splint, you know, with gauze or medical tape or something, and or your small ace bandage, and put it on your finger. If you break your leg, you know, femur, shin bone, something like that, you're going to have to get some whatever convenient material around you have. Saplings work good for this because they're about the right size usually. Saplings come in a variety of sizes. So find a sapling in the right size. If you find some, you know, fallen deadwood that's not rotted yet and it's just still nice and strong, that may work for you too. But a sapling is probably the way to go. And I'm not going to go into exorbitant details on this. I'm sure all of you have survival books, or you can do a, you know, Google search on how to create a splint. Sorry, guys, got distracted somehow. Create a splint for that, because it's doing one for the femur, the leg bone there that's you have to create traction on, and you have to have like one longer one that goes up your side and then one that goes on the inside, and then it's pretty complicated, and explaining it without visual aid, you're just going to be like, what the fuck is James talking about? So yeah, look that up. So, but yeah, get saplings, use cordage. You can use local materials, but you probably in your bug out bag or hiking pack have cordage of some kind. Use an ace bandage where you need be. Tying pieces of gauze, that kind of work. So that's where you use your local resources to augment your first aid kit here. So yeah, like I said, we can carry in a Sam splint and it'll be good for a lot of smaller breaks. But yeah, for the larger ones, you make your own splints and fuck your fingers, guys. You don't need a splint for your finger. If you do break your arm and you have to put it in a Sam splint, you're probably going to need one of those triangle bandages. I've got a ton from military first aid kits that I've got, and you go to like gun shows and whatnot, and there's that table of the military surplus guy, and triangle bandages are super cheap if they don't just throw them in for free. And basically a triangle bandage is a huge bandana, and it makes a good sling. I mean, that's the main reason they carry it in there, is basically it's a sling. You can use it for a lot of other things. It's very multi-use. But yeah, it's, you tie the basic square knot on it, put it around your head and sling your hand in it, and it'll immobilize it so that it's there. So, and it's a lot lighter. If you buy a sling, they're bulky, they're heavier. Triangle bandages are tiny. I mean, they pack up, like, in the package, they're, like, smaller than a pack of cigarettes. They're fatter than a pack of playing cards, but they'd fit. We'll say they're about the pack of a playing cards or so. They're a bit thicker, but I think their diameter, like if you put them on top of one, it would come in just a little bit under. So, small. There's no reason not to throw one or two in your pack. And like I said, they have so many uses. There's no reason not to. The last thing is dislocations. We are not going to really focus on dislocations. I mean, if you grew up watching the action movies of the 80s, then, you know, every tough action guy has dislocated his shoulder and had to pop it back in. You know, and lots of other people have had their shoulders dislocated, and someone's like, I'll pop it back into place, count to three, one, pop, got ya. You know, that's every action movie, basically, from the 80s. You don't see that anymore. But I'm not even gonna, you know, it's not gonna stop you from doing most things. I saw sort of like some tutorials on how to like relocate most of your bones and stuff. And it being dislocated is going to hurt bad. Relocating it is going to hurt bad. My advice is to just go to the doctor. Just get out of the woods. While reading about it, there are things that can go wrong trying to relocate a bone. So my suggestion is don't do it. Take some of your pain medicines from your first aid kit and just get out. Just go to the doctor, have them relocate it, where they're going to know what they're doing, and it'll be an easy chore for them to do. Unlike you, that could very well fuck it up. So yeah, that's my advice on dislocations. They're not going to go long on it. If that's something that you are actually interested in, you can find lots of resources on the internet on how to relocate bones. And if you're out in the woods and you want to take that chance, by all means, go ahead. I'm stupid and I might actually try to do it myself, but I would not advise doing it. I take my own medical care in my hands probably too often, so that's me, and I can't give medical advice. So my advice is to go seek the advice of a medical professional. I just get out of the woods and go do it. So, and like I said, this first aid series is focusing on the grid is up. The collapse has not happened. You are not bugging out per se. You know, like there's still medical help to be found. It may be a local or personal disaster. And, you know, like if you're in Florida and you're leaving Florida, that's bugging out of Florida, you know, for when we had the hurricane down there. But this is not a shit hit the fan first aid kit. Because I've personally had lots of personal need for first aid, but I have not ever experienced a true global shit hit the fan or collapse. So I tend to build my kits for reality. You know, even though I got into prepping and survival because of zombies in a way, and I do like the philosophy is of if you're prepared for the zombie apocalypse, you're pretty much prepared for everything in between. So there's that. But I would much rather prepare for common sense everyday collapses and disasters, job loss, sprained ankles, as opposed to the total collapse of the United States of America. But that is on the horizon. I mean, that's on my mindset. You know, that's always in the back of your mind. Like, you prep in case that happens, but you prep for daily things, and your preps will get used. So I need to probably do an episode on prepping mentality, or the grid of what's more likely to happen. Anyway, that wraps up part 3, right at an hour, so I did not have time to cover tools. That's the end of part 3 of our first aid series, and that was all about sprains and breaks and dislocations, kind of. So let me know in the comments or email me if you're enjoying the first aid series. I'm still debating if the tools, the last part, is really worth it, or you guys are ready to move on to something new. So email me and let me know. And we've covered some tools along the way, you know. And by tools, I mean like you carry a cutting blade, a first aid, one of those Mylar blankets, you know, the accoutrement to your first aid kit to go with the things you have in there. So let me know, and I'll decide whether I want to do that or not, or, I don't know, make it a bonus episode or something. And with that, this has been James from Thrallpunk.com. With special appearance from Cash Potato Mike momentarily. Have a good day, guys, and DIY to not get a sprained ankle used, guys.